ladies and gentlemen.
Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Sound Sound Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Sound Radio, your go-to source for everything happening in the Vancouver music scene. I'm James Olson.
And I'm Travis Noel.
Happy Mother's Day from the Pacific Sound Radio team. We love our moms and we hope you've had a wonderful day celebrating that one special lady in everyone's lives. Not sure if you had a chance to check out any shows this week, Trevor, but I had the chance
Trevor?
To... Did I say Trevor? Oh my God. I'm sorry, Travis.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, geez, yeah. Holy shit. Okay, Travis.
Even wrote it in the script.
I know, right? We don't have a script. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you wrote it in the imaginary word box.
Yeah, in the word box that we totally come up with off the top of our heads. But anyways, I had a chance to hit up the Color Tongues release show this past Friday, May 10th, at Fox Cabaret. I missed the first band, but I had a chance to check out the second act, Slow Spell. We're a very pleasant surprise. If you're a fan of bands like Chelsea Wolfe and A Perfect Circle, I would highly recommend checking out this band. Vocalist Lindsay Johnston can really wail. Color Tongues, of course, were amazing as always. They're good friends of the show, and they just seem to get better with every gig. All right, so this week's episode features a nice mix of artists and styles, and our first half will be joined by singer-songwriter Brian Michael to chat about his past life as a post-punk pop-punk drummer and his recently released EP, Distractions. And our second half, R&B, soul, funk, rock ensemble Rain City returned to Pacific Sound Radio to talk about their upcoming EP release, upcoming summer plans, and much more. But first, we pass the mic over to Travis to dive into a segment that we like to call the Weekly Roundup.
All right. So, in great news, Resound and SoCan are teaming up to make things easier. If you're unfamiliar with Resound or SoCan, they're both performance rights organizations that work so that when music is played, artists get paid. Collectively, they have launched a joint venture called In Tandem. With that, businesses like stores, restaurants, gyms, and stuff, they can play music and they won't have to go through two separate businesses to play music. They can get it all done in one swoop. Hopefully, it'll make it easier and more businesses will do it because it's easier.
So basically, as opposed to earlier, they don't have to report to two separate entities that they've played music at their businesses. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, just one joint thing for the two things in Canada that does it. It makes sense.
Yeah, smart.
Mm-hmm.
Cuts down on the paperwork.
Yeah, absolutely. And in not so great news, crowdfunding platform Pledge Music is entering administration, which basically means bankruptcy. Plans to sell the company in the last few months fell through, and unfortunately, it seems like this is the end. Any funds received for the assets of Pledge will be distributed to creditors, including all of the artists owed money. Hopefully, all the artists owed money finally get the money that people donated to them.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll admit, I wasn't as aware about Pledge Music as, say, other crowdfunding platforms, and I know artists have had success with platforms like GoFundMe and Patreon, so... Mm-hmm.
I think this was an earlier one.
Oh, okay.
Bigger, like, worldwide.
Pledge Music?
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, they had, like, Skinny Puppy.
Yeah.
We're on it, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars owed to...
Damn.
Some bigger artists and stuff.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. I hope, nonetheless, that... What do you call it? Yeah, the artists that are owed money get their money.
Be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks because people gave the money to go to the bands they liked, and if they don't get it, it's kind of...
Sucks all around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the news this week.
So, good and bad. Yeah. Sounds like the news.
Yeah.
All right. So, that's a weekly roundup for this episode. And our first guest... for episode 72 is Brian Michael. Brian Michael is an acoustic rock artist who blends soulful singer-songwriter stylings with influences drawn from his pop-punk past. Take a listen to this track off of Brian's latest EP, Distractions. This is Better Man. Back. That was Better Man by Brian Michael, who's just joined us in the studio. Brian, how's it going?
I'm doing great, thank you.
I understand your voice is a little shot from a show you just played last night.
Yeah, we went a little bit hard last night on stage, and I can barely speak today, so my apologies, but thank you for having me.
Perfect timing for an interview, but it'll be okay.
Yeah, I should have thought about that before.
Well, kind of on that, your show last night was actually your release show for your latest EP, Distractions, at the Railway.
It was.
How did the show go?
It was amazing, actually. It was super stressed leading up to it, but it ended up going off very well, and we had a great time.
Nice. Who were some of the openers that you had?
We had Elliot Slynn, who I just met for the first time yesterday. It was actually three acoustic artists, so Elliot Slynn, Jaron Chidiak, and Bree McDaniels. and they're, I believe they're all local here to Vancouver, but they were all super amazing. It was really cool to have them play at the release show. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's great. So kind of, I guess, winding back a little bit, hopping in the time machine, what's the earliest music you remember really connecting with and going, ooh, I want to do that?
Oh, it was probably Matchbox 20's Yourself or Someone Like You. I remember jamming that CD. I think I must have been in grade 6, and I think it was the first CD that I owned. But I can listen to that album still front to back and sing along with every word.
I'm trying to think of some of the... Does that one have, like, all the big Matchbox 20 songs on it?
Yeah, like 3 a.m. and...
Unwell?
Real World. No, not Unwell.
Not Unwell?
No. Push.
Oh, yeah, Push.
What else is on there? I think that was it for their like, singles and the big hits, but if you listen to the record, the whole album is really great.
It's
would recommend.
Yeah, I mean, for what it is, I mean, Matchbox 20 were one of the better, as much as I hate using this label, like adult alternative,
yeah,
post grunge bands out there of that time, like that late 90s period.
Yeah, exactly. No, I still really dig that song or that album, and I mean, most of the 90s music, I think that you can kind of feel that vibe in my songs.
Yeah. Are you a fan of, I'm sorry, you brought up Matchbox 20, so I have to ask, Smooth by Rob Thomas Santana?
Oh, of course. That's a staple. You can't not love that song.
I love that song, ironically and unironically.
You know, I can't remember where I was, but I saw just one guy playing a cover, like an acoustic cover of that tune. And it was so amazing. It was so good.
I think that'd be... It's definitely a karaoke favorite, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of the ones you want to pull out. Because you know it'll get everyone going.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't know that song?
Oh, yeah. It's like All-Star. It hasn't approached the same level of meme status, though. Not yet, at least.
That was... All-Star was thrown around when we were trying to... decide which cover we would play last night, but ultimately we didn't go with All Star.
So in lieu of Smash Mouth, what did you decide to? And it wasn't Better Man by Pearl Jam. I was saying before we started on the program that, like, I saw that on the track listing, and I was just like, that can't be. no way. Come on, Brian.
Yeah, just
I like that song, but
a huge Pearl Jam fan, and I definitely did decide to cover Better Man and put it on my record for sure.
With completely different lyrics and melody.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so different. It's like it's a completely different song.
Almost, you would think.
But what song did you wind up deciding to cover last night?
We went with Semi-Charmed Life by Third Eye Blind. It was...
okay.
Yeah. it was a good time. Yeah, we had a great time. And I think that, I mean, you start out a cover and you say, if you know this one, sing along. And most people are, I probably don't know this one. But... I think everyone in the room knew that song last night, so it was a crowd pleaser.
That's one of those great songs that's it's so happy sounding, but the subject matter's like extremely dark when you read the lyrics.
Yeah, actually, I've noticed that a lot about a lot of Third Eye Blind songs.
Yeah,
is that, I mean, that's, it's the vibe of the music is so upbeat and happy, but you listen to the actual song and it's kind of depressing.
Trying to think of, I guess, some other similar examples to that would be You Can Call Me Al by Paul Simon. Super upbeat song, but it's about a man whose life is falling apart. Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
You're right.
It's about alcoholism.
Yeah.
It's horrible, but so great. How did you get your start performing music? After discovering the magic of Rob Thomas and Matchbox 20.
I played in... actually, I think the very first time I performed, I played Time of Your Life by Green Day. And, of course, I did. And I didn't know how to play guitar at the time, so I had asked a friend of mine if he'd play guitar for me. And it was at, I think, one of his shows. And he just let me play this song with him at the end of his set. And, it was a lot of fun. I'd never performed before, never really thought about it, And then I started playing in bands after that, and the rest is history, you know.
But you did, like, the first few bands that you joined, did you immediately go, like, yeah, I want to be a vocalist, or did you wind up gravitating to some other instruments instead?
You know, I've always wanted to sing. It's always been something that I really love doing. But since I never played an instrument, I didn't really think it was for me. So it was just something that I enjoyed doing. And then when I started playing guitar, that's really when I kind of started to write my own songs and think about actually performing in bands. But I went from singing to playing guitar, and then I just wanted to focus on playing guitar. And then I actually started playing drums for a while, and I did that for about 4 years. And I was still singing, but I wasn't, like, singing in a band. I was just doing backups and whatnot. But after that band dissolved, I wanted to kind of do my own thing and put my songs out there, because I've had a lot of these songs since I was in my early 20s, and this is the first time actually putting them out there. So it was nice to finally get something like that out.
Yeah, for sure. And kind of speaking to that, I mean, I'd say your most notable project before pursuing a solo career was your stint as the drummer for the pop punk band Sharks on Fire. What were some highlights from your time with the band?
We played a lot of really cool shows, and a lot of my best friends now I met through that band. I have a lot of bad memories too, but a lot of good memories, a lot of lessons learned, and a lot of great people that I met through that band. We opened for the Wonder Years, which was probably one of the coolest shows we played with Sharks on Fire. But I think what was really cool about that band is we would jam a lot at Bullies. That's where we would rehearse out in New Westminster. And the community of musicians out there is just super cool. And, I mean, there's a variety of genres that play music out there, but it doesn't seem to matter what genre you play. Everyone out there is just super cool and super chill and not hesitant to invite you into their scene.
And kind of speaking to that, what were some of the lessons you learned from your time with Sharks on Fire?
If you see bad behavior in some of your close friends, then maybe it's time to reevaluate those friends.
Yeah, that's a very important lesson for sure.
That's kind of all I want to say on that, if that's okay.
That's all that you need to say. And kind of on that, you kind of partially answered it, but I wanted to dive into this a little deeper. What led you to pursue a solo career after, you know, leaving Sharks on Fire, as opposed to forming a new band or drumming for another band?
I would say that calling it a career is being generous, but and like I say, I've had these songs for a long time, and I don't necessarily want to play solo. I love playing with a band. I do enjoy playing solo, but there's nothing like getting on stage with like four of your good friends and just having a good time. And when it's the chemistry's right and the band is tight, playing solo will never match that, you know. But I just like playing music, to be honest. I still play drums often. I'm actually playing drums for Leave. Their EP release is coming up on May 29th, and I'll be playing drums with them. So I'm really excited about that. But yeah, it doesn't matter whether it's solo, whether I'm playing with a band or playing drums or whatever. I enjoy playing music with good people.
Fair enough. How is your experience creating? just a minor interruption there. How has your experience creating pop punk music influenced your own solo material? I mean, listening to Distractions and some of the other songs that you've released, I can definitely hear some influence in there.
I was trying for that not to happen, but no, I don't know if I can really get away with it. I don't particularly enjoy listening to pop punk now, but it's just something that I guess is ingrained in me. I don't know how to explain it. I don't know. You have those records or those songs that never really leave you, you know? And I mean, I think most people in their teens, early 20s, probably listen to a few pop punk bands at least. And yeah, those songs never really go away. And it's catchy. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. That's what I think that I really dig about pop punk, that I do like is it's catchy. Yeah.
I get what you mean. I mean, the first band that I ever really got into, the band that got me into music was Green Day. Like, I remember hearing Holiday for the first time off of the American Idiot album, and it just changed my life.
Yeah.
So I've always I don't know if you feel the same way, but whenever I listen to pop punk, especially like stuff from, you know, early 2000s or late 90s or whatever, there's kind of this like nostalgic feeling.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Even if it's like a band that you didn't really listen to that much when, you know, you were younger, but like even just like connecting with it for the first time, you're like, oh, this reminds me of being in high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
For better or for worse.
I think the lyrical content for a lot of pop punk songs is relatable to, high school.
Yes. I prefer the stuff that's a little bit more, not sure if clever is the right term, but a little more nuanced.
Yeah. And that's what I really liked about the Wonder Years is their lyrics are, I don't know, they're not the typical pop punk lyrics that you would expect to hear. They're a little bit more, I don't know the word I'm looking for. They're just more thorough. They're deeper than, you know, this girl doesn't like me, you know, that you hear in a lot of pop punk tunes.
Yeah. I mean,
I hate this town.
That reminds me of a Hard Times article where it's, country pop punk band conflicted about feelings on hometown.
I love the Hard Times.
That's so good. I was going to say, I find it, oddly enough, a pop punk band that I didn't really get into until I was in college, like well past high school, was Jimmy Eat World. And like revisiting, I think it was Futures and Bleed American. Those records are just like two of the best of the genre, I'd say.
Ooh, I'm about to lose some friends here. I've never really listened to Jimmy Eat World. Yeah.
I mean, you've definitely, there's...
I've heard like the middle.
The middle, because yeah, it's inescapable.
Yeah.
But I would recommend, I mean, I haven't listened to... I've really only listened to three of the records, but if you're going to give them a shot, I'd say listen to Bleed American and Futures.
I will do that just for you, James.
All right. Because they are good. I will say that, in my opinion. I don't know. It's all subjective. But.
Well, I mean, I don't think I've ever had someone tell me that they didn't like those albums. I've had a lot of people tell me that that I should listen to those albums. But I don't know. It's kind of like when someone tells you not to do something, you kind of want to do it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when that's like, it's the same thing with Blink 182. I used to really like Blink 182 when I was like 13, 14. And then everyone started listening to Blink 182 and telling me to listen to the next Blink 182 album. And I just got tired of it. And I could never get into it. And it's the same with Jimmy Eat World. Like, so many people have told me to listen to it that I kind of don't want to, just because so many people have told me to do it.
Well, this is again just falling on personal preference. I much prefer Jimmy Eat World to Blink 182 because I'm going to lose some friends here. I think Tom DeLonge is not a very good vocalist at all. I mean, I think the benefit you'd have with Jimmy Eat World is, with the exception of like maybe the middle and like the two other big singles off of Bleed American, they're not nearly as overexposed as Blink-182.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one thing I found about the middle is the music video, and they always cut it out. Like, they go to some side scene in the video when the solo is playing, and that always bothers me.
They never show the guitarist just...
And not only do they not show him, but, like, they turn the volume down in the song, and then there's some dialogue or something. And it's,
yeah, that is lame.
Yeah, like, I mean, not to bring down the rest of the song, but to me, I love that guitar solo.
So it is a great guitar solo.
I don't know why they do that.
Yeah. Music videos are a beast unto themselves. I'll say that much. But I kind of agree. There was almost this... I want to say, I remember when being in high school, that was like the peak of what I like to call emo pop. So like, you know, Fall Out Boy, MCR, Panic at the Disco. Actually, that was the three-headed monster, really. And I remember like Fall Out Boy, at their worst, their music videos were like these mini movies where they'd have dialogue that would interject into the middle of the songs.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a huge fan of Fall Out Boy in high school. So it didn't bug me that much, but I always still found it annoying how like overly elaborate some of their music videos got.
They're artists, man.
That's one adjective for sure. I will say this though. First, My Chemical Romance album is actually really, really good.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's a shame that they got worse as they went along, but...
Yeah, I don't know, the Black Parade for me, that was, I listened to that album front to back for like months and months and months. But I don't know, anything after that, I couldn't really vibe with.
I will say, I mean, as much as I haven't really listened to Three Cheers to Sweet, is that the album, Three Cheers to Sweet Revenge, their second? I believe so,
yeah.
As much as I honestly haven't listened to that album front to back, but I will say Helena is like their best song, like hands down.
Yeah. Yeah, I really dug that song. I saw a cover band playing that song once, and I thought that was pretty ballsy.
That is ballsy. I'll be honest, I can't say I've ever been to a show where I've seen a band try and pull that off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's a tough vocal range to hit.
That and just the dynamic shifts are so dramatic.
Yeah,
on that song, in a good way. Yeah, let's talk about your music a little bit more here. Didn't expect us to go down such a deep pop punk rabbit hole, but nothing wrong with that.
I can't escape that. Yeah. It always happens to me.
So, song we want to play is Older Now. What can you tell us about this track?
So this one is actually not on Distractions. This will be coming out, I would say by the end of the year, it's going to be on an EP called The Half Broke Horses. And I actually wrote it with a buddy of mine, Robbie Sheriff in Old Towns. And we did just a kind of a live off the floor EP where we both covered a song of each other's and then wrote a song together. So this was one of the songs that came out of that. And after we recorded it together, I kind of wanted to do a little bit more with it. So I recorded a full band version of it, and this is kind of the rough mix of it, so you're getting a little bit of a demo, but yeah, that's kind of what it is.
Good stuff. So sneak peek of a future release.
Yeah.
All right, this is Older Now by Brian Michael.
And I still have dreams about growing old with you, and now the worst in each other that we brought out. Oh, we're so much older now, and we're so much colder. Now, I can still feel the weight of your heart on my shoulder.
And we're back. That was Older Now by Brian Michael, who is with us in the studio. So wanted to talk about your recently released EP Distractions a bit. Who are some of the bands and artists that have served as a source of inspiration for you, especially with this latest release?
Oh, man. It's a tough one, just because I've been listening, or I've been working on this record for so long that there's been so many bands that have, that not to say come and gone, but you know, you have your kind of picks of the week or picks of the month. But I would say, definitely a local band called If We Are Machines, a huge inspiration of mine. Their guitar player, he played all the lead guitar on Distraction. So, I don't know if you want to say that's an influence, but definitely I heard him playing and I approached him about doing the lead guitar. I mean, Gaslight Anthem, I think you can hear that a little bit in the recordings as well. And I don't think I can get away without saying AFI. AFI has been like my favorite band since I was 12. So, yeah, sometimes when I was mixing the record, I was going for kind of a mix between, what the hell's that Gaslight Anthem record called?
56 and something, something. Yeah. Nailed it.
American Slang.
Oh,
American Slang and Sing the Sorrow. That was kind of the production style that I was going for. And, yeah, just the mixing style, I think.
Is Sing the Sorrow a AFI record?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
I was just going to ask, considering I had recommended a pair of Jimmy Eat World records earlier in the interview, would that be your number one recommendation for old school AFI? Because, of course, like, kind of speaking to pop punk exposure in high school, everyone was like, oh my God, Miss Murder. I re-listened to that song recently and re-watched the video. I'll admit I cringe quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with Davey Havok's hair at the time. I am very glad that he got a haircut.
No, I would say Sing the Sorrow would be the last stop for me. I did listen to December Underground just because I felt an obligation to. And, I mean, sometimes I go back and I re-listen to it, but Miss Murder is definitely a track that gets skipped.
Because, again, like AFI, great band, especially before December Underground, but like, if I'm being quite honest, Miss Murder is a holiday rewrite. In a sense, I mean, that's what
yes,
I hear.
It does have that that rhythm to it for sure. Yeah, I don't know. That was actually when, because I was anticipating their next record for the longest time after Sing the Sorrow. Because, I mean, I would say Sing the Sorrow is probably one of my favorite records of all time. So I was definitely looking forward to the next release. I drove down to Seattle to go to a December Underground listening party.
Oh, wow.
Before it was ever released. So that's how much I was invested in this new record. And at that point, I don't think any of the singles had been announced yet. We just went and we listened to the record once through in this like dive bar. And when I heard that Miss Murder was the single, I was blown away. Like there are so many other tracks on that record that would have been a better single in my opinion. But, I guess that's what happens when you're on a major label.
Adding Sing the Sorrow to my, Spotify right now.
Yes. Every song on that record is a banger.
Did you ever listen to Funeral for a Friend?
No, actually.
Ooh, okay, so I would say, oh man, what is there? So Just a sec. Let me just pull something up here. They have one specific record, very much of the same era, for a friend. Another album recommendation, I would say check out Hours. It's got a schoolgirl with a bomb vest or a bulletproof vest on. But there's I think it's Streetcar? Yeah, the song Streetcar is awesome.
I'll check that out.
It's like emo-ish, vocals, but the guitar leads are very metallic, which is cool. It's kind of like they're kind of similar to Coheed and Cambria in a way, in that like the vocal styling is very much of that like emo pop sort of era, but the guitar work and the instrumentation is very different.
Yeah, you had me at Coheed and Cambria.
Yeah, I need to see them again next time they come by because I've seen them like 2.5 times.
Oh, I bet they'd be a great live show.
The craziest thing is just seeing Claudio Sanchez sing that high live, and you're like, oh my god, it's real. There isn't any studio manipulation. He's actually just a freak.
That's so funny. I remember the first time I ever listened to Coheed and Cambria, and I think it was on YouTube. I think I saw Blood Red Summer, the video. And I was thinking, these guys must be actors. They're not actually like playing this music. And then I saw like a live video of them and I was just blown away. Like, that's who they are. That's the band. But yeah, you don't expect that voice to come out of that guy.
Yeah. Big hairy Mexican American. I'm going to say Latin American. I don't know if he's Mexican.
Gonna have to edit that out.
Yeah. I just didn't have that information in front of me. Let's see. You've worked with a number of different musicians and collaborators over the course of your previous releases, including Stu McKillop, Patrick from the band Douse, and Edmonton artist Old Towns. Who were some of the folks you worked with on Distractions, and what did they contribute to the project?
Like I said, Clark Grieve from If We're Machines and a variety of other bands in Vancouver. He's a busy guy. He played guitar, on tracks 1 through 5, all the lead guitar and all the bass is played by Clark. Emma Citrine did some backup vocals on the record. Had to throw her in there,
As if she'd give you a choice. Love you, Emma.
Actually the guy I used to play in a band called Brian and the Tukes, and it was me and the bass player from Sharks on Fire, Evan Fulwiter, Max and Patrick, actually who played drums on Distractions, and Peter Falk. And in One of These Days, Peter plays some rhythm guitar. And then I got a buddy of mine, Mitch Ostreicher, and he plays harmonica in One of These Days. So that's what I was going for when I was recording. Like, I wanted to just collaborate with friends and get them on the record as much as possible. So, yeah, there is a lot of features.
Nice. Yeah. Almost like a hip-hop record.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost. So they're all local musicians that no one knows outside of Vancouver.
you got to create the scene somehow, right?
Oh, precisely. Distractions is your first self-produced release. Why was it important for you to really take the reins on this EP in terms of handling that side of things?
You know, when I started recording this, there were a few kind of false starts, and I had an idea of what I wanted. Not necessarily having an idea of what I wanted it to sound like, but I knew what I didn't want it to sound like. And the first few times that we started recording it, I could tell it heading in that direction. And so I decided to just complete everything myself, which took a lot longer than I wanted it to take. But ultimately, I think I got the result that I was looking for. And the lessons that I learned just in terms of audio production along the way are going to be super helpful for me going forward. I love recording and I love mixing and I love producing music. So it was an experience for me to go through the whole process of doing it.
And You have like a professional background in recording and engineering as well, correct?
Somewhat. I would say it's more of a hobby, but I mean, yeah, I went to a recording art school and like I have a little bit of a home studio at home. And I mean, I've done live sound engineering for many years, but I wouldn't say that I am a professional in any sense, but yeah, it's something that I enjoy doing. I think that I'm all right at doing it. So it's, yeah, something that I'd like to keep doing more.
For sure. What are some of the themes and subjects you tackle on Distractions?
Oh man. I think for me with this a lot is mental health. I started writing most of these songs when I started kind of being able to recognize the symptoms in myself and being able to come to terms with having to deal with it and accepting it. I mean, a love, obviously. I don't know if you can write an album without touching on that, and losing love. I mean, it's a weird thing when a relationship ends, because there are obviously lessons learned from it, and there are good things, but there are bad things, and I don't know. It just, they all kind of go hand in hand, and you, for me, anyways, writing is just a way to help kind of acknowledge my own feelings and learn how to process them and deal with them.
What are you hoping listeners get out of this EP? It sounds a little bit more pointed than I mean.
But. No, honestly, like this mixing this record, it got to a point where I was just doing it for me. So, I mean, if anyone gets anything out of it, then that's great. It's just for me.
But at least, I mean, there's an honesty there, though, that it is, you know, you're writing and releasing music that you are happy with, and if other people like it, great. If not, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I don't, I think I spend a lot of time playing music and performing to appeal to other people. When really it should be about making yourself happy. And I think I definitely had lost sight of the reason that I originally started performing was just because I enjoyed it. And there started to be some kind of end goal. But I think that some of my favorite songs and some of my favorite projects are just people getting together and playing music for the hell of it. So that's about what it is for me.
You write quote unquote happy music for sad people. With your music, you certainly don't stray away from serious topics on your songs, but do you feel your sonic approach is deliberately upbeat?
I think, I don't know. I can't get away from it when I try to write new songs. It's just something upbeat about it. I can't write like a slow tune. I don't know. Like I'm playing drums with Leave and all of their tunes are quite slow. And I wish that I could play songs like that on guitar, but I just, when I try to play songs slowly, it just somehow ends up getting that kind of, that shuffle sound to it. And so I don't know. I don't know if it's deliberate or it just happens, or I just need to expand my own musical abilities, probably.
I don't know, maybe listen to some 50s balladeer stuff. Maybe. I don't know. Or doom metal. If you want a real binary contrast. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that.
I'll play metal.
Doo-wop metal.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. You have, you know, obviously past touring experience, the Sharks on Fire. Do you have any plans to tour as Brian Michael in the near future?
Well, I'll, to be completely honest, putting this band together was incredibly stressful. And I was, by the end of it, just thinking, you know, let's just get through this show and then that'll be it. And I can and move on with something else. And the show ended up going so well last night. And the guys that played with me, I should mention, actually, Paul Herman, Ian James, and Jackson Marshall. They were up there with me last night. And the vibe was just so good. And the chemistry between us was unparalleled. Yeah, I'm going to use that word. Like, we had first rehearsed on Friday night before the show. So we hadn't played together, all four of us, until Friday night before the show. And it just... it went so well, considering, and by the end of it, we were talking about playing some more shows, but nothing serious in the works. I would love to, but I mean, it's hard enough getting people who have jobs and have other commitments together to play one show, let alone go on a tour. But I mean, not opposed to it. I would love to, but I don't know how we're all going to get into my Yaris.
Like a clown car, I guess. what's coming up for you in 2019, especially this summer? I mean, you already kind of mentioned that you have some, you're working on some new music.
Yeah. So everything's recorded for that. I just need to have it mixed, and I'm not going to do this one myself. I'm actually going to get someone else to do it. And it's just going to be three tunes. So it'll be coming out, like I say, by the end of the year, I hope. Other than that, since the show last night, we've been talking about just getting together and writing some music. Ultimately, that's what I'd like to do. I'm kind of sick of my own ideas. I want to write music with other people, and that's one thing I think I can accomplish with Ian and Paul and Jackson is to write some. I don't know, some Brian Michael tunes, but with a band, and that's what I'd like to do.
Yeah, well, and you said that your new band is or what do you call it? The new name for the band that you're playing with right now, it's Half Broke Horses, right?
What it is actually is it's Jackson Gardner and Brandon Evans from Glen Eagle. They played the drums and instrumentation on these three tunes. So I'm a big Jeanette Walls fan, and I don't know if you know the book Half Broke Horses. It was just something that that we were kind of bouncing around when we recorded these tunes, and it just kind of stuck. So that was the name of the EP was going to be Brian Michael and the Half Broke Horses.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it sounds to me like, and oddly enough, a weird horse connection. It's kind of like you're doing what was the name of Neil Young's backing band for a while?
Crazy Horse.
It almost sounds like you're doing, you know, Neil Young and Crazy Horse, but it's Brian Michael and the Half Broke Horses.
Exactly. Yeah. Or modern day Neil Young. Let's go with that.
I will say, and I'm gonna lose so much clout here, but I like your voice more than Neil's.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. He's got one of those voices that you can't help but love, though, you know. It's kind of like Bob Dylan or like Conor Oberst.
Or Leonard Cohen's another example.
Yeah, those voices where it doesn't matter if they're a little bit flat or a little bit sharp or their voice is a little bit wavy. It just, I think it's the lyrical content.
Yeah, Cat Stevens is another example for me.
Yeah, I'm a big lyrics guy, so yeah. I can look past a performance if the lyrical content is worthy.
Oh yeah. I
sound so pretentious.
Oh no, but it's what I've said multiple times about Cohen, Dylan, and Young especially, is that like they're not the best singers in the world, but hot damn, do those guys know how to write songs.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's gonna be, I mean, Cohen's already passed away and he was like 80 something, but it's gonna be very strange when Young and Dylan pass on.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's just like Tom Petty. You never really think it's going to happen. You think that these people are just timeless, you know?
Yeah, and Petty was, that was just sad because he wasn't even that old. He was like maybe, you know, he was just, he was in his late 50s, I think.
Yeah.
And he didn't even hit 60. I mean, and then you got Paul McCartney and Dylan that are still touring somehow, and they're in their 70s.
Exactly. The Rolling Stones still touring?
They do like one show a year now. I think they do. Yeah, I think they do like one show in Canada and like one show in the U.S. But yeah, I think their like global touring days are behind them. And I mean, I don't blame them. Someone's probably going to like, they probably had hip replacements between the Keith Richards is probably the bionic man at this point. Let's be real.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now there's a guy again, no ill will towards Keith, but I'm kind of surprised that he's outlived a bunch of other folks.
Yeah, he's seen some days.
Yeah. What local bands or artists would you recommend we bring on the show for a future episode?
Oh. Well, I would definitely suggest Leave, but my opinion might be biased on that one.
Maybe a tad. We have had Emma on the show before as well.
Have you had Sam Cave on the show?
No.
Oh, you guys should definitely have him out. Paul, the drummer who played with us last night, he plays with Sam as well. Super great songwriter, super tight musician. Definitely a guy to look out for in Vancouver.
Good stuff. Anyone else you'd recommend?
You guys have had Porto on here.
Mm-hmm. That episode was rough. I was very sick during the recording.
Did you had them in the studio? You were sick. You still had them in?
Yeah.
Oh, I hope they're okay.
Oh, they're fine.
I don't know. I think you guys have had all the staples out.
Yeah, not everyone.
Oh, what about Nikita Afonso?
No.
Oh, you guys got to have her out. She's amazing. I mean, all the guys that played last night as well, Elliot Slynn, Jaron Chidiac, Bree McDaniel, all great musicians, all solo musicians that I don't know, it's tough to get up there and play solo and kind of sell that performance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It takes a certain kind of performer, but they all did it really well. So yeah, any of those folks, absolutely.
Good stuff. Keep that in mind. How can listeners check out your music and keep up with everything you're up to?
Probably Apple Music, Spotify, Bandcamp. I've got all that. Distractions is out on all those platforms and more. I think I keep getting emails from Deezer that my album is up. I've never heard of Deezer before, but if you have, my music is there. I think one thing would be to mention that my name is Brian with a Y, because if you type Brian with an I, you're not going to find it online.
Mm. That is actually a very important detail.
But, I probably should, but I don't have like a Facebook page for my music or anything. Mm. I'm taking this very seriously. Can you tell? No, I don't know. I can't justify myself having my own Facebook page just for my music. I already have one for myself that I can't barely maintain. So why would I have another platform that I need to maintain, you know?
Yeah, maybe if you went with an alias, but I think it might be a little too late at this point.
Yeah, maybe late to the game on that one. Oh, I should also mention playing July 4th at... I'll tell you in a moment here. Sorry. If you have to go somewhere else, that's fine.
Oh, no. Please pull up that info. Definitely want to share that.
So it's at the Spade Cafe. And who else do we have there? Cody, I believe, is playing as well as a few others. Man, I'm sorry. I should have had this.
Well, it's all good.
Is that part of the Root Dwellers?
Root Dwellers, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are really cool events.
That's what I hear, and I was just friends with what's her name, Claire, on Facebook, and seeing some of the stuff that she's been posting about their shows, and it looks like a really really cool vibe there, and a good a good community of people coming out and playing and watching music. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, I think your music especially felt like lines up perfectly with kind of the vibe of the event. So that's going to be rad.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're playing, yeah. So one of the next Root Dwellers events, July 4th, you said, at the Spade Cafe?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, good stuff. Well, thank you so much, Brian. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you guys for having me.
Here's one more song by Brian Michael. Brian Michael's latest release, Distractions, is available now wherever you stream your music, including Deezer, if you're using that. This is Losing Sleep. Back, you're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was Losing Sleep by Brian Michael. Be sure to check out his latest EP, Distractions, available now wherever you stream your music. All right, so our second guest for this week's episode is Rain City. Rain City, formerly known as Rain City Blue, are a R&B, soul, funk, rock ensemble that have developed a reputation for their high-energy live shows and professional-grade musicality here in the city of Vancouver. The band is on the cusp of releasing their third release, the Rain City EP, on May 18th, and they have a very busy summer lined up ahead of them.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
So,
yeah, we're good. We are tired, but so happy to be here.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a sec. But for listeners who aren't familiar with the band or didn't listen to the previous episode that we've had the band on, let's just do some quick introductions. What's your name and what do you play?
My name is Claire, and I do the singing in the band.
My name's Kaylor. I play the saxophone.
Riley, I play the guitar.
Sheldon, I'm the drummer.
And Ginger couldn't make it out today, but she plays bass for us.
Good stuff. All right. So, as kind of what you were saying earlier, the band just played Vinyl Envy's Psych and Soul Fest in Victoria at the Roxy Theater just last night. How was the show?
So good. Yeah, it was a really inspiring and really incredible lineup. And Vinyl Envy and the organizers just did a beautiful job of putting together a wonderful show. Yeah. It was really great.
Who were some of your favorite acts from the festival?
Ooh, I mean, I wish we could have seen the Psych Night as well, but unfortunately we were playing in Nanaimo the night before. So we really just saw the Soul Night, and honestly, all of them were absolutely incredible. The New Souls, Quarterback, and the New Groovement, that, like, I was blown away. Yeah.
I've heard very good things about Quarterback.
Yes. He kind of, he's got like, oh my gosh, him on stage is something else. He had this beautiful like fur Dalmatian tracksuit coat with like short, oh my God,
it was great.
It was definitely a lot in the best way, and his voice was incredible. It was, let's see. Ooh, this one's a little bit different. Yeah, I have nothing but good things to say. I'm very inspired from that evening.
I mean, Dalmatian tracksuit just kind of says
right?
it all.
Oh, yeah. Goals.
Yeah, exactly.
And dance moves to back it up.
Yes, and incredible voice to back it up as well. Yeah, we're definitely going to take home some notes from some of the other bands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So much like that classic song by Staind, it's been a while since we've featured the recently renamed Rain City on Pacific Sound Radio. I do have to ask what made you decide to drop the blue from your original name, Rain City Blue?
Just the amount of times people thought we were a pretty traditional blues band or would call us Rain City Blues. Or there was just a lot of confusion we noticed with the name, and it kind of got to a point where it didn't necessarily feel like it was representing us in the best way. So we just dropped it, moved on. People were calling us Rain City anyway a lot of the time. So we just thought it'd make it easier for everybody.
Felt pretty natural.
Yeah. It also kind of allows us to go into any genre and people not to immediately be like, hey, they're a blues and jazz band, which I'd say primarily we're not really that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've described you folks on the program as like, you know, R&B, soul, funk, rock, kind of a mix of stuff.
Yeah,
like that. Certainly blues and jazz are elements to your sound, but it sounds like you've kind of moved a bit beyond those initial influences.
For sure. Yeah. And that's a lot of it. We got booked a couple shows too where we were playing with some relatively traditional acts. That was a bit weird. Soft jazz ensemble into funk rock party.
Yeah.
So I think it's just been a good transition to move into something that people were already calling us, and to give ourselves like a little less boundaries within genre and the name as well.
For sure.
Yeah, of course. And also just honestly having one word band names is the way to go. I play in a band that's called Impurities, so it's just one word.
You're gonna remember it.
I always found it, I mean, there are some bands that can get away with it, like, you know, the mighty Boss Tones are just like ridiculously long band names, but I just never understood
King
the
Gizzard and the Lizard
Wizard. Some
that
bands can rock
beautiful.
It but it's one, two words tops I feel is kind of the best way to go.
A lot of them, for sure.
Or if you're one of those the bands, you know, it's kind of out of style again. So, what have been some highlights for you individually over the past few months since we last had you on the show?
Oh, we've had a great year. We did pretty well in a couple of the competitions we took part in over the year. We took part in the Hard Rocks Rock the Mic contest, mm-hmm. and the Roxy's launch contest.
Yep.
Those were highlights. Getting to play with some of those acts was awesome, and obviously winning was awesome, but playing with the other bands and just doing it all was a very cool process for us. We got to record at the Warehouse this year, spend 5 days there just chilling and working on music, and that was just an awesome time that, you know, got to really explore things and be creative, and that was great. Mm-hmm. So many awesome things, honestly.
Yeah, we played a couple different festivals, Riplandia, Canadian Music Week, Seattle Hemp Fest, and Vancouver TD Jazz as well. And we recently got funding from Creative BC, which has been hugely helpful. We'll be making our first two music videos at the end of the month, which we're very, very excited about.
Yeah. Do you know what songs you're going to be doing the music videos for?
Yeah. It's for the song that you guys just listened to, which is This Up. We got a pretty fun idea going on for that one. And then one of the songs that we'll play later on, Crazy, is a little more artistic and maybe a little bit more dark, which I'm pretty excited about, too.
Do you have an idea of who you're working with on the music videos?
Yeah. Their names are Wayne Chung and Bailey Wood, and they're kind of a video team. They've been absolutely incredible so far, kind of just taking the reins and, like, really organizing every single little piece about the video. So it's really nice to work with people that, you know, are artistically so motivated and really, like, know what they're doing in the realm of their craft. And to be able to just kind of pass that off and enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Lovely humans, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they a local duo? Have they worked with a number of local artists here?
Yeah, they actually worked with Sheldon's brother, which is how we know them. And they created a wonderful music video. It was for Meditate, was it not? For his single?
Yeah.
So he goes under...
Cam Blake's single, Meditate.
Yeah, it was an incredible music video.
Really solid video.
And we kind of figured after seeing that and hearing about the process that they'd be a really good team for us as well.
Good stuff. Yeah, I'll might consider them for a future Pacific Sound Profile segment, because I've always loved having music video directors on the show where we can, because I'd say my second love next to music is film when it comes to the creative art. So
they're especially really inspiring to be around, because, like, our first meeting, they showed up and they had a huge list of questions for us of, like, you know, who we are, why we do what we do, and what we're looking for. And, like, the way that they delved into it is, I don't know, it just, like, it was so impressive, and then,
personal.
Yeah, it was impressive and personal, and, like, they really want to get this to be something that shows who we are. I hope I kind of articulated that in the right way, but they just did a beautiful job of, putting the work into the project.
Do you have a general idea of when those videos might be available for folks to check out?
I mean, the hard dates are still TBD, but probably like August and October ish. And then we'll have some more details on that soon once we get into post-production.
Nice.
Yeah.
So one of the highlights you folks mentioned was the band won the Roxy Launch Project in November 2018, if I got my calendar right.
Yeah.
With you competing against some local favorites, including Friday Night Fires, who I've been meaning to have on the show because I love them. Sleepy Gonzalez, who we have featured. Late Night Takeaway, who are active, and I'd like to have them on the show. I just don't know exactly what they've been up to.
They've got a cool sound. They've got a really cool
great.
Sound. Really great trio.
I describe them as, I'm not sure if the band would agree with me, but I describe them as if Julian Casablancas sang for the Police.
I had a very specific description of them, and I'm forgetting now, but it was... Oh, it was almost like if Kings of Leon was a trio.
Oh.
It was kind of what I thought of. And like a little more, like slightly more chill. But yeah, they're a great trio. You should get them on here at some point too.
Yeah, for sure. Also, you've performed against Mind Offline, who we had on the show and are unfortunately not a band anymore, but
yeah,
happens.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be the first band we've had on the show that isn't a band anymore.
It's a thing that happens with bands.
You either keep going or you break up. It's really like
only a couple options.
Yeah.
Or you reunite because you need the money.
Yeah.
Reunion tour.
Again.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah, I hear Fleetwood Mac's coming back.
Again? Yeah. After they fired Lindsey Buckingham. Again.
Oh no. Oh, that's upsetting. All right.
Yeah. I always find that funny. Like I saw Black Sabbath do their farewell tour and their last few tours they didn't do with their original drummer. And I'm like, you guys are grandparents. Like, why are you still bickering with each other?
Yeah, we played. Was it Trooper that was at the Hard Rock Casino?
Foreigner.
Foreigner, thank you. And they, I think the only original member they had was the bassist. And I was this is suspect.
The age-old philosophy question, like the boat question, where it's like, if the boat's running down, you slowly replace each piece of the boat as it's, you know, getting maintenance. At what point does it cease to be the original boat?
Like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, metal bands especially are notorious for just having revolving doors. It's like, yeah, we've had 30-plus members in our band. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, that being said, I mean, you folks won the competition. What was the initial reaction like within the band?
I mean,
we were stoked. Yeah,
definitely stoked.
We were definitely excited about that.
It's pretty serendipitous. I mean, we were going into the Warehouse studio the next day, and the prize just kind of covered that immediately and up front and completely.
Immediately,
absolutely.
Most definitively.
I got a few more adjectives.
It was awesome. It was just cool to take part in the whole thing. All these other bands are amazing, and just to like see them all, and not even win, but to make it to the finals, and just to see all the bands, it's just cool to.
I agree.
To see like everything rise up a bit.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's it.
Meeting all the people that were involved with the event, like having new bands to play with, Riley and Kalar after the Roxy launch project, they afterwards did some judging with a Roxy program, which was like
the,
with a high school.
High school Battle of the Bands with Nimbus and Music PC, I think, and stuff.
Christina Lowe.
But like meeting all the people through that as well has been really wonderful to... Oh, you should talk because
it's just been awesome to take part in all this stuff and do it. Obviously winning is awesome. It's nice to have people, you know, make your unearned confidence a little more earned. But, you know, it was just a cool experience. Mm-hmm.
I am curious about a high school Battle of the Bands competition. Were there any that stood out in a way where it's like, oh, my God, this band will actually, like, if they stick together, will be a... is going to keep going as a good band, or was in some cases was it like, oh, they're good for a high school band, or was it more of the former than the latter?
Well, lots of talent in that show. Interestingly, not a lot of bands.
Mm.
A lot of solo acts and smaller groups for sure. Maybe one full band.
There was a few bands for sure. I mean, like there was a band that we that was in the competition called Skookum, and they were really cool. They were like I can't remember if they were seven or eight of them, but they were quite a large group.
It's a big band.
Yeah, it was. No, it was at least seven, I think.
Okay, maybe.
It was a big band, right? And it was cool. The guy had like a guitar, and like they went out there. They had so many. It was cool to see young kids just having all of this stuff there and putting it all together and just, you know, getting involved in it and not
exploring.
Doing other things. Yeah, it was. There was definitely some cool things like that. But singer-songwriters, there was a couple girls in particular that really stood out and had a very mature sound for their age and had the songs and records and tendencies to, you know, stage performance. It was cool to see little kids really having it all, kind
of. Mm-hmm. The winner of the competition, actually, that we judged was Zoe Levin. She's hugely talented.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, was the sound kind of more in, like, the... R&B sort of vein of things? I ask simply because it seems like, because, you know, this happens in cycles, but like R&B and hip hop are
definitely
reigning.
There was
all
a lot
popular
of, like,
music now, so
soul pop, like,
okay.
soul pop. Somewhere between like
R&B, like,
yeah, I think like Zoe, for example, was definitely had a lot of R&B influences, but she was a bit more pop. And another girl, Ashley Patter, who plays quite a bit, actually. She's playing at the Roxy, I think, like, next week or the week after or something.
Mm-hmm.
she was almost like Hiatus Coyote or something, like almost like a jazzy kind of infusion-y kind of artist.
Oh, and cool.
It was just really cool to see high school young kids exploring music that wasn't necessarily what I assume the kids today are listening to, you know?
None of them were coming at, doesn't sound like there's a single Lil Windex or whatever on the bill.
I'd rather not talk about the low points because you never know who's listening.
And that's where we'll end.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. One thing I noticed because I think, Jane and I were at that finale show, and we saw the band donning some very colorful stage attire that is becoming, in a way, iconic with Rain City visually. For you folks, how important is it for the band to not only entertain your audience, but also look the part as entertainers?
It's where all the fun comes from.
Yeah, it's. I think it's part of like amping up your own hype for the performance, and like definitely at the point when we threw a Halloween show. And we realized that our Halloween costumes were basically what we just wear normally. We were like, okay, this is definitely a thing that we do then.
Not quite as far as some of
I know. It's, I personally find that it helps our performance, to have something that, you know, makes it feel like a little bit more, a lot more than everyday life. Because,
extra.
You know, if people could sit in their living room and watch us play in our sweatpants, why are they coming out to a show? It is my feeling, at least, you know, like if you could be kind of half asleep at home listening to someone half asleep play in their sweatpants, then like maybe you should just do that at home. But on stage, it's like something about it has to be more than every day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my band doesn't exactly dress up, but I try at the very least to like, well, I want to look like someone in a band on stage, not just someone in an office.
We like to be just like a little bit extra.
Yes.
Just a little bit.
I was throw it to Garth Brooker, but he gave us a quote one time. He's like, if you want to look like you're in a band, you kind of need to wear your stage clothes every day. You can't just have the outfit once, you know, when you go up there, you got to kind of just like be that person to really make it come out, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think we've kind of taken that advice a little bit to heart.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
A lot.
Oh, I mean, that's something that like Peach Pit do. Like, they've got their, basically their uniforms, but they're casual at the same time. There's something like, you know, East Van hipster would wear, but it's their part of their image.
But then even like they played on the same day we did that Halloween show, and they went full on Kiss.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, and
they
when
wore
I saw
100% Kiss outfits.
Yeah, I was out of town. Otherwise, I would have absolutely been at that show. But when I saw the photos of them in Kiss costumes, I was like, oh my god, you guys are geniuses.
Yeah, that was great.
This is why you're one of the biggest fans.
I actually had tickets to that show, and then it was like, oh, we have a show on that day.
Yeah.
Damn.
Somebody want these
That's sold out, which is just incredible. I love seeing that stuff.
Yeah.
When we last spoke with the band, you were in the middle of recording your next EP, and we had a chance to listen to some demos, including an early version of your latest single, Gave This Up, which we played earlier on the program. What was your experience like recording the Rain City EP at Warehouse Studios?
Absolutely incredible. I couldn't recommend it more, especially the fact that like the staff are so knowledgeable, engaged. It kind of makes each minute worth more, because every once in a while, like if we do a lot of the work ourselves, then you know we'll have to leave and you know go get food and water. And sometimes I'd be like singing. Yeah, I'd be singing in the booth and being like, oh, I need to take a break, like I need to get a water. And then somebody would show up with water, and I was like, what? This is a thing? But it makes your time worth more. Like we got so much done.
Yeah.
The equipment, the people, like,
hospitality was awesome. Everybody there was really there to help us and draw the most out of us and make it a relaxing environment to be in. Mm-hmm. And obviously the studio is legendary and the gear is amazing and all that stuff. But really, I think it's the people that made it awesome for sure.
I agree. Yeah. It is really important also to be like, relaxed and in the right headspace and the right mood when you are recording, which, you know, sometimes it can be stressful if you're on a time crunch. And I didn't feel stressed the entire time. It was just, it was wonderful.
Speaking of which, what was it like working with Furby Midgley?
Midgley?
Yeah. Thank you.
I know, it's a strange name, but it's an awesome name. He's our dude. He's our buddy. He makes studio time so fun, and he is a wizard editing.
On the Pro Tools, yeah.
Yeah, no, he is so incredible. We'll be recording with him this August as well when we record our next single.
Nice. What perspective and guidance did he offer while you were going through the recording process?
Honestly, a lot of it is just that, you know, that person outside of the group to kind of just have another, you know, when everything's your idea and it's all your art, you overthink everything to the 10th degree and nothing really.
Or the obvious thing doesn't stick out.
Exactly. You can't see the forest through the trees, right? So having somebody there to just bounce ideas off of is just awesome. And he'll come up with little ideas and see the inspiration, and that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And just the way he kind of like helped us while we were actually in the studio to manage our time and just like work through the process in a way that was, efficient and productive and comfortable and whatnot. Was just awesome. He's one of those people where like you get around him and everybody just loosens up a bit and you start telling a few jokes and it's all good, you know?
It's all about the vibes.
Yeah, it's all about the vibes. He's magical in that way. He's just, everything's just floaty and good times while he's around, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm.
It's infectious.
Yeah.
Nice. Your sound has slowly evolved with each release. How would you say this latest EP stands out from the rest of your discography?
I think it's kind of in relation to what we were talking about before with the traditional music and people kind of confusing us for a blues band. Like when we started, our initial group, we started doing smaller jazz music, like more traditional oriented jazz music and stuff like that. And I think our early releases do reflect where we were at that time, playing a lot of the music we play now, but with a more stripped back and traditional kind of focus. As we've continually released more music, we've definitely been more open to experimentation and exploring new sounds and different styles to interject into our music to kind of keep it fresh and exciting for us as we create it. And that's probably really where it's coming from, just continually trying to add more different stuff to what we already have.
I think one thing that's kind of cool about this EP is the three songs have like really, really distinct styles and sounds. So the one that we just listened to, we kind of think is more like an old school funk, like with a new spin. Soul is a little more like disco funk pop. And Crazy is definitely more in the like funk rock.
It's almost dirty. A grunge rock.
Yeah,
song.
It's almost a grunge rock. It's a little bit more dark and heavy. And so, you know, it's all based around what we do, but it's kind of like pushing the edges in different corners of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You'll find this funny, but whenever I hear Soul, especially that sax line, I always think of the Epic Sax Guy meme.
Oh, no.
How did you know that's what I was going for?
I just guessed.
That's her idol.
But it's like, not just like that clip, but like the loop of that one like line. It's just forever. But yeah, that song's great. Let's see. Were there any, besides obviously Epic Sax Guy, were there any specific artists or records you were listening to while working on the EP that guided your approach to writing and recording this
release?
Yeah,
probably not ones you'd expect, though. I think like during this time, we've listened to like a lot of like Anderson .Paak and like a lot of hip-hop and really modern new soul music and even rock music. Honestly, a lot of the things that we're influenced by and listening to aren't necessarily things that I think we even sound like a lot of the times.
I agree.
It's an interesting thing being in a group because everybody has their own influences and comes to with totally unique backgrounds. And I think if we were left on our own devices, I think all of us would make very different music to what we actually make when we come together. So it's kind of a very cool process in that way. Seeing it all meld, but yeah, we're listening to like a lot of Anderson .Paak and almost like hip hop music, I think, for the most part, while we've been kind of putting this all together.
Moon Hooch.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I think every time we come on here, we just rave about Moon Hooch.
Really, if you're using good songs, then the tools that you use from that song can really be applied to anything. So, like, even some of the tools that I used for those songs were from Alexis on Fire, and we don't sound like Alexis on Fire at all.
Maybe crazy.
Yeah, sure, maybe. Probably not.
I would be very interested to hear you try and do Alexis on Fire cover. I want us to do that so badly, actually.
Yeah.
It'd sound radically different, but Rage would be great.
We've been trying to find a Rage song to do that is at least somewhat appropriate for a cover gig.
I mean, the one I two I can think of right off the bat would be either Sleep Now in the Fire or Testify.
Okay, Testify is pretty reasonable, actually. For like a one people would know, Testify is like probably one of the ones that is definitely can't do Killing the Name of.
No, I think about Gorilla Radio.
Oh, that's another good one.
Bulls on Parade were two ideas as well. I guess I have to fake rap, but we'll figure it out.
Let's see here. What song went through the most changes and rearrangement while you were recording the EP?
Soul. Yeah, definitely Soul.
Okay. Yeah, we almost didn't record Soul, actually. It was like this kind of slower, drudgier, like, what was it even before?
It was like half of the band was trying to play like a soul song, like a neo-soul like song, I think, and half the band was trying to play like a rock song. Mm-hmm. We were like, there's just something about this song. It's just not clicking. Yeah. Out of nowhere, one person after playing
it was
the song.
It was Furby. We were playing it in pre-pro, and he just suggested to me to just lay like four on the floor during the choruses, and then it worked out really well, and then me and Kayla were talking, and we had this look, and we're like, disco. Let's just make it disco soul.
I think we doubled
it. Trying it.
Doubled the speed. It was like, before it was like, and right now it's, like,
it's essentially unrecognizable now.
I agree. Yeah, I changed all the lyrics too, so. Yeah. And that was like pretty last minute. I was like, oh, the chorus is different. Words will be different then. Yeah. Good.
That song definitely went through periods.
We do that a lot, though, with our songs.
It's fun. We try out different styles for each song. Actually, we're really excited to do that in one of our new songs. Yeah. We're going to go back to the songwriting table soon.
Nice. What is your favorite song off of this new release? I know there's only like five-ish.
My personal favorite is definitely Crazy, but that's me. I don't know about you guys.
My favorite is probably Give This Up. I enjoy how just straightforward it is, and especially playing it live. It's a song that I feel like we can almost just open with. We can close with it. We can put it in the middle. It can kind of just, it always is going to be comfortable to play. It's always going to come quickly to us, and it's always going to work. There's never a question about it or anything. We can play it slow and it's still going to work. We can play it fast and it's still going to work. We can play it loud, it's still going to work. And I enjoy that.
Yeah, what about you guys?
Well, actually, I kind of think the same thing. Give This Up really comes across well when we play it live, and there's never a question whether we should play it or not. But Crazy is probably one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Actually, Crazy. Yeah, Crazy is probably song-wise my favorite. But certain shows, we don't even play it because it's not for the crowd, or we want to keep people dancing, so we don't want to bring it down too hard, you know?
Not always appropriate.
Yeah.
I'm definitely totally in line with that. Like, Give This Up is super fun to play, especially live, but Crazy is an entirely different experience. And the recorded version, I love the recorded version.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love Soul, too. But I think I've heard it a million times now. Like, more than the other
Tell
two.
Me about it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
What excites you most about the release of this new EP?
Honestly, just
probably the show.
No, I was going to say just being done and getting to go to these other things. I know that's not the most hype answer, but when you make a record or you make songs, you just spend so much time with them. You know, they're your songs. You spend hours doing every little piece of it, and then you've spent hours in pre-pro, hours in the studio, hours mixing it. You just heard the songs so many times. We're all just ready for the next thing, I think, at this point.
Yeah, it's weird. You kind of see them grow up before they're even born.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, so that I think that's for sure. And then the show this weekend, the Wise Hall, May 18th, Saturday, playing with Apollo Suns. They're outstanding. Sleepy Gonzalez, we mentioned earlier, is opening the show up, and they're also just awesome, full experience to watch. And we've been looking forward to the show for quite a few months now, since we set it up.
something I find really cool with this recording or this EP was the artwork too. We used it simultaneously with our name change too, and used it to help rebrand. And Taka, who did all the artwork for the EP, is actually doing a live painting at the May 18th show too. And then we're going to give it away.
Ooh.
So that's going to be cool.
Yeah. He's a phenomenal, like, I don't even know what you would actually call
spray paint art.
It's definitely mixed media. He, not only is he incredible artistically, but he's such a lovely human being, and he's really worked with us quite a bit. He's going to be helping us out on one of our music videos as well. We're kind of setting up this modern art museum, and his art will be featured on the walls, and he's just kind of donated some of his stuff during the shoot, which is so sweet of him. Yeah. So we're really fortunate to have found somebody that can help us out like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we kind of talked about this a little bit before the break about some of the new artwork, especially for the EP. The band featuring the band's sax playing cat mascot, Captain Chilbro McFatsits,
who just, is some... just Chilbro,
just Chilbro. It's just Chilbro now.
His okay. PC name.
All right. So just Chilbro, who has somehow become even cooler with his recent redesign. Can fans expect Chilbro to be featured in some way on most of your promotional artwork going forward?
Oh hell yes.
Yes, absolutely. That was Taka's redesign. Just to mention him again because he's been so great. We have posters. He's on our shirt. He's on our stickers. Yeah. He's on the album. He's on our web.
He's not on the stickers.
He's not on the stickers.
Oh, a bunch of people just died. The studio is
fucked. You know what's funny is that sounded like a sound effect. It didn't sound like something actually breaking.
That's
but.
True. He will be with us for a while.
Yeah.
I have this vision of an animated series, but maybe that's just me.
So do we.
We have a music video idea where we want him to have, like, or do we give, yeah, I mean, we don't know if this is going to happen.
You can say it's an idea.
Yeah, it's an idea. So basically we have this one song that's about terrible drivers, and so we want to have Chilbro in, like, a toy Barbie car with a bunch of mini Chilbros, and then he'll, like, meet a, like, another gang of stuffies, and then they have a brawl, and it's, like, all done in, like, claymation or, like, stop motion and just over the top and ridiculous. I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about that.
I almost see it more like a Nyan Cat sort of thing. Yeah. To dig up dead memes, but maybe that's just me. Rain City's played a number of shows stateside, particularly in Point Roberts, Washington. What advice would you give a band that's looking to play in the States but wants to make sure that their visa is a worthwhile investment?
Find a sponsor.
Point Roberts is a situation for us that's really awesome. We have a friend there, Whitney, who owns the Breakwaters Marina Bar and Grill, and he loves us. We love him. So he helps us guarantee our visas through his sponsorship, and that definitely lowers the risk and cost of it on us having that reliability. So I mean, that would be one thing. Find a person down there who owns a bar and is willing to sponsor you. I mean, obviously, that's kind of bad advice, but
well, no, I mean, you definitely want to have enough shows booked or planned so that you know that it's worthwhile, because you know it is expensive and it is a lot of work to get the visas to go through. And if you're not quite sure, I would maybe just recommend waiting. Because really you can get a lot of shows on this side of the border and not have the risk of the visa. We are fortunate that we have somebody that can sponsor us and guarantee those shows. But if we didn't, I don't know if it would be worth it for us either.
Yeah, probably not for us right now.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's just something I like to ask about, because you know there are plenty of BC bands that have been able to make touring in the States work, but it's just more money than it should be.
Yeah, it really is. There is the advantages if you are willing to work through some of that process and and find some sponsorships. There are some amazing venues to play that are within a not a very far distance from us. Mm-hmm. I mean, Seattle's only like a 4-hour drive away, and there are so many legendary venues in Seattle. So there's plenty out there to look for and dive into if you're really motivated for it. But it is a process. It is definitely a process.
I also think, though, just like talking about touring in general, like it is very expensive to tour just in general, and the usual idea of tour that people and like ourselves included before have is like, you know, you go away for like a month at a time and you have to go like all the way around North America. But probably like definitely what we're trying to do is do smaller weekend tours that are just, you know, a little more financially doable, and so that we can make these little small trips out, you know. It's it's a little bit more bang for your buck, and definitely when you're in a band, it's helpful to
all
have.
The bucks matter.
Yeah, it does matter. Yeah.
First goal, break even.
Yeah.
Hopefully. With summer just around the corner, what are some of the bigger shows that you have lined up?
Canada Day, we got very fortunate. We get to open up for Our Lady Peace and Biff Naked, and a bunch of other acts are playing with us at the Canada Day Cloverdale Festival in Surrey. So that's one we're obviously pretty excited about.
I think just as I mentioned before, we're doing a lot of those small trips. I think we're going to over 14 or 15 different cities in 2 months, and that's like interior BC, Vancouver Island, into
Kelowna,
Washington.
Kamloops, which we're excited about.
Yeah, so it'll be nice because we really have done a lot of shows in Vancouver, but we haven't traveled as much as we'd like to yet. And it'll be nice to get to those towns for the first time.
We'll also be playing at the Railway
for
Beer Cafe this year with TD Jazz Fest and many awesome people, like, I don't know, just many people that are awesome. It's going to be awesome. Didn't like leave that there.
Everything is awesome.
We've already kind of talked about this, but I might as well just bring it up again. When's your next big show, and what do you have planned to make this gig really special?
The Wise Hall this weekend is for our release. We've been talking about it already, but it's definitely a show that we are very, very excited about. For anybody listening that is interested in it, there is a promo code you can use if you buy the tickets online. If you put in Friends of Chillbro with no spaces, you do get half off the tickets. So if you are interested in coming out and checking out the bands, they're all astounding. And it's just going to be amazing. Just use that code and get half price off all your tickets. Might as well.
Yeah, we love the Wise Hall. B, we love Sleepy. Apollos we have seen before, but we haven't played with them, and we danced our faces off in Toronto when we first saw them. They also just got nominated for a WCMA for Best Instrumental Artist of the Year. So, like, they're doing some incredible things as well. We've got the painting from Taka, which we'll be giving away, and like a fun little photo booth, which we're excited about. Space theme. You get to dress up as Chillbro. As we said, Chillbro's kind of coming with us everywhere. He's a fun little mascot.
On that note, again, Friends of Chillbro is the code you use to get half price off the tickets.
Online.
Friends of Chillbro, no spaces.
True salesman.
All right. So we're always looking for new guests here on Pacific Sound Radio. Are there any local bands or artists that we have?
If you have not got Laverne on, please get Laverne on.
Absolutely. Definitely.
It's like a goal of mine now to hear Max on the radio.
It would be hilarious.
I agree. He would be fun. He would be so fun.
Yeah, definitely Laverne. Definitely Laverne if you haven't got them on.
And that's Furby's band as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yeah, definitely Furby's band.
Let's see. I know that I think you've gotten Sleepy on here. You've definitely gotten Chase the Bear on here as well. Those are two of our favorite people.
Yeah.
Also, Wayne and Bailey too. Like,
yeah, Wayne and Bailey would be great.
Video,
Definitely.
And actually, if you can get some of the people to come over from Victoria, the New Groovement, New Soul, and Quarterback, really incredible artists.
Even my brother Cam Blake,
he's
up and coming. He's 18. He's got a lot of potential. I know, right? He's done a lot for an 18-year-old.
He also sang on. He did background vocals for us on "Give This Up." You can definitely hear him, which is
just threw him in the room too.
Oh, that was so fun.
He came by to check out the studio, and we're like, "Hey, you're doing backgrounds."
He's like, "Yeah, for sure." He like had a little solo moment as well. Oh my gosh,
he was
great.
Yeah, he
was
got so into it.
Yeah,
that's awesome. When can listeners check out your new EP in full?
So we just released Give This Up on Friday, and Crazy will be coming out on May 31st. So those three songs will be out by the end of May. But we do have some interludes, some like little extra songs, which we're only releasing on the physical EP. And that's something that we kind of wanted to keep special for the people that come to see us in a live experience. So if, you know, if they want to have the full EP, it's just something that they can get through us.
I like that idea. Encourages people to actually buy a CD.
Yeah, well, I think it makes it something special rather than something that you can get online. You know, it adds a little element to the EP, which is more indicative of what our shows are like anyways. We definitely have a little bit more instrumental jam time within our shows, and the EP with the interludes kind of shows off some of that as well.
Nice. How can listeners check out your music and keep up with everything Rain City?
Yeah. So if you search Rain City on Spotify and follow us, we will have all of our music coming to you on there. Bands in Town is a great way to keep track of our shows, and really any band's shows. You can track artists, and it'll tell you when they're playing, where they're playing, and it will always update you. Or just keep, you know, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or check out our website.
www.thatbandraincity.com.
Yeah. I do have to say, personally, Spotify and Bands in Town I use to follow artists, and it's just an easy way to keep up with what they're releasing and where they're playing.
Many of our fans follow us through Bands in Town. They find it the easiest way to keep the most up-to-date with everything.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much. So great to have you back on the show again. We're, I think, going to endeavor to try and get the whole Pacific Sound Radio team out to the show on May 18th, because that's going to be off the chains, the kids are saying these days, I think.
Yep. Reminder. Blah. All my salesman points are lost. Remember to use code friends with Chilbro.
Friends of Chilbro.
Friends of Chilbro online to get half off your tickets. Please buy them online using that code.
We're a little loopy. Forgive us.
Yeah, a little tired.
Well, thank you so much. Looking forward to the show for sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us in here.
So thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson
and Travis Noel.
Thanks, James. Thanks, Travis. Thank you.
Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jane Fraze. And Travis, how can people check out what we're doing?
You can check us out on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, as well as our Instagram at Pacific Sound Radio, YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, as well as our website, PacificSoundRadio.com.
If you know a local band or artist that you think should appear as guests on our show, let us know. Fill out the form on our website or send us an email to talkpsr@gmail.com.